Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Despite what their moms told them, they just aren't talented enough for radio. Unfortunately, anyone can have a show these days. Sean.
Well, I'm pretty hard to figure out sometimes. In fact, I can't even figure myself out sometimes, so don't you try to.
Joe.
You're an idiot and really a disloyal person.
This is the Cuse Militia. Those two unapologetically biased orange-blooded homers, Sean and Joe.
It's the most bullshit thing I've seen in 30 years.
Welcome, orange men and ladies. Happy Sunday. This is the Cuse Militia with Sean and Joe. At Cuse Militia on the socials. Go there. Join the militia live on X Spaces for the final segment of each show. Syracuse gets run out of John Paul Jones Arena, 84-62, in the first ACC game of the season. You'll hear from us. We'll hear from you in fan feedback. And this Tuesday at 8 o'clock, Syracuse will be taking on none other than the Big Red of Cornell. And we will let you know what we think about that. So, Coach Boeheim had his first broadcasting debut.
That's right, he did. I didn't listen.
Oh, it was great.
Was it?
I mean, I thought it was good. I think, like, 30 seconds into the game, he's bagging on refs. So, about a travel call. And so, anyway, it was, it was good. It was good. It lightened it up from the Corey Alexander, you know. I think most Syracuse fans find Corey Alexander a little agonizing. And, you know, I think he's okay, but he can be god-awful sometimes. But it was fun. Is that the thing now or what? Because I know he's going to be working with ESPN, but is that what he's going to be doing? He's going to be broadcasting games courtside?
Yeah, I think.
Well, that's interesting.
That's what it seems like.
That's interesting. I think that's kind of cool. I don't know. But yeah, his debut yesterday, did a good job, I thought, from what I heard of it. I only watched like the first half. I had to do some running around and stuff, but nonetheless, pretty cool. So, and I guess that's the trio then? He's going to be with Durham and Alexander? Or is he going to bounce around?
I don't know. I'm assuming that he's going to bounce around a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, look, yesterday, a solid 15 minutes for Syracuse. And then the next 25 were just not great. So,
no.
You know, I think, well, we'll talk, right?
Yeah.
Let's do this. Coach Red's official first montage. Let's hear what Coach Adrian Autry had to say following the game.
Well, I thought, for the most part in the first half, we battled for a little while, and then kind of got away from us, a couple of defensive lapses, a couple of missed shots. I thought that impacted, that kind of opened the game up. And obviously when you play against a team like Virginia, that is very good on both sides, especially when they have a lead. I thought the lead just was tough for us to come back, from that, on the road, first time, an ACC game on the road. So we knew it was going to be a challenge. We knew it was going to be hard. Second half, we didn't make it much of a game, and they just, they played really well. Obviously, our defense wasn't strong enough. And, we did some other things, but the game was just kind of out of reach for us. And we just got to keep working and getting better.
What particularly do they do differently as a team when a guy like Jude is coming into the lane?
I think they do a really good job of having 10 eyes on the ball. They always know where the ball is at. They know what is being driven. They know, they have a very good understanding of where they need to be at on the floor. So, again, that's why they have the number one defense pretty much year in and out, year in and year out. They just change players, different names, but the same system. But they have a very good understanding of having 10 eyes on the ball and where everyone's at.
Sticking with McNeely, how tough a matchup is it when he is hitting the outside shot, because he's developed some mid-range and some go-to-the-rim stuff now?
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he's constantly moving. They look for him. I thought they they found him, and, we lost him a couple of times. And then, again, you know, the one thing I'll say is he's definitely extended his range. He made some bombs. You know, I think he made two or three bombs. I mean, the last shot he made, Cardia Copeland step back. That was, that was pretty contested. And one he made in the first half, almost near half court, was end of the shot clock. He made that one. So again, he's a tough cover. You know, he got a lot of experience last year, and you can see that that experience has helped him. You know, I think we can play eight or nine guys. You know, ideally, you know, I would like everyone to play well, but again, sometimes that's not going to happen. You know, I thought, you know, Quadir came in and gave us a lift. Malik obviously played well. But, you know, we play consistently eight or nine guys. So, you know, that's how we want to play.
All right. So, look, in a nutshell, Syracuse did a pretty good job of defensively for the first 15 minutes of this game. They were struggling, you know, to hit some shots. But you're not going to beat. When you have a guy like Judah, who obviously has still got to work on some of his outside game, in which came as no surprise, right? But you thought maybe there was a chance, at least I thought maybe there was a chance that Judah could create some problems inside. But that defense, they doubled him and tripled him and whatever they could do to stop him. And he wasn't getting any calls. He only got to the line once, and he missed one. He was 0 for 2 from 3. And one of them was an air ball, and that haunted him from that point on the rest of the game. Of course, the fans, you know, they capitalize on those mistakes. But they took care of Judah. Bell was off. You've got McNeely going 6 for 8 from 3. He led all scores with 22. And he was hitting some ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
At the end of the shot clock, twice, he hit some really long ones. And it was just like, when you've got that cooking like that, man, and you can't hit shots, Syracuse struggled with the bunnies in the second half. They couldn't hit anything. There was a freaking lid on the basket. And you've got no one that can step up and take the place of the scoring for Judah. And there was a lot of rushed things towards the end because of trying to play from behind. Justin Taylor struggled. What was he? 1 for 6. From three-point range, Syracuse 25% compared to UVA's 57%. That is so hard to win games when an offense is clicking like that, let alone the pack line defense was just it is what it is. I think Coach said it best right there when he said the pack line defense is what it is. They just change the names, but the results are the same. Every year in and year out, you also had Beekman that was on Mintz, who was the top defender in the ACC last year, is a phenomenal defender. And look, not surprised, a little surprised by some of the success that UVA had on offense, but it just seems like when teams are going to have a day against Syracuse on offense, they have a day. And you saw the difference between a team that was not panicking even early when it was tied and they were struggling a little bit, but did not panic, had a game plan on each side of the court. And you've got Syracuse who's, when they started to fall behind, Joe, they fell behind so quick that it was almost just like at the end, like take the end of the first half. I mean, when we were down by 15 at the end of the first half, they just closed, UVA closed that half out so strong that you just knew there was insurmountable hill to climb. I mean, at that point, just ridiculous.
I mean, and that's just Virginia defense, right?
Right,
and,
exactly.
And unless you have to kind of bring the pressure to them, you have to, you know, make them make the mistakes, you know, like what we did back however many years ago when we came back. Was it 2016?
Yeah, well, we were hitting shots too.
Right, but it was we were hitting shots, and then we pressed them, and we got them, you know, kind of in that groove. I think Virginia is just not the team that you want to sit back and just kind of, you know, I mean, in a fighting or boxing, you know, mentality, right?
There's, like jab, there's, jab, count, jab.
There's punchers and yeah. there's counter punchers, yeah. right? Like, you don't want to – Virginia is the guy that's like – they don't look like they're a problem. But if you sit there and you let them just continually punch you, and they're good at ducking and dodging, and you can't counter punch, then they're going to knock you out. And that's kind of what happened yesterday. I mean, forget the fact that 54% from the – I mean, they shot 54%. But teams just aren't going to do that. But you know, Virginia is just that type of team where they're just always there. They're always there. It's always going to be difficult. You're going to have to make tough shots. You're going to have to be strong with the ball, and you can't get in your feelings. You know, there's just too many times, I think, with this team when it looks like they're trying way too hard. And then there's certain teams or certain players that look like that. That sometimes certain games against certain teams or against certain talent, it's too much for them or it's too big for them. You know, like, you know, you look at like Justin Taylor, right? Some of these teams, it's really, really hard to get your own shots. And, you know, sometimes we get lulled into sleep. We're not moving well. And even if you are moving well, their defense is very, very good. So, yeah, we got to be obviously more diverse in our offense. You know, we can't just rely on Judah Mintz and Chris Bell shooting from the outside. You knew that Virginia had a game plan, and it was to stop Judah and any other random things like, oh, dumping it into Nyheim McLeod, like they double team him and he can't get out of that, you know. So overall, it was frustrating to watch, but also too, you know, there are those certain things where it's like once we start getting cut, like we can't stop the bleeding, especially against certain teams like especially against a team like Virginia. It just feels like almost every year we play them, it seems like this. Like they just have that suffocating defense. We try to stay in it early, but
they control the pace of the game early. We hang a little bit, and then, you know, it becomes, like you said, it becomes suffocating. You just can't. Because with Syracuse in many teams, when they get behind and they rush shots, and they're taking bad shots. I mean, they're taking bad shots. They're taking shots quick in the shot clock, and I mean, it's kind of undisciplined. Mm-hmm. It's what we've seen, and that was my point about, you know, you've got a team in UVA that is handling both sides of the court professionally as could be, very yeah. disciplined, well coached. And I'm not knocking anything. I'm just saying that it's a very disciplined, well-coached team. And you have to match that on up and down the court. And mm-hmm. McLeod just, I mean, he just struggles, man. He gets double teamed. He's walking. Like it's so nerve wracking to watch him get the ball down there and then get double teamed. You just know it's coming. It's only a matter of time. It's like Chukwu back in the day when, you know, he'd get double teamed. He's just going to get the ball's just going to get taken out of his hands. You know, he's got to get better down there. And Malik Brown did good. Malik Brown did good coming in, as he always does. And, you know, I just feel like we're just worlds apart from that kind of team. It's always a bad, and matchup wise, it's just terrible for us. It's terrible for us.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you know, then you throw it on top of there where you got a guy who, I mean, he hit his career high in the first half against us.
Exactly. And that always happens. Does that not always happen? That happens to us quite a bit, dude.
Yeah. And then that also, it's one of those things where, you know, all these people that wanted to, you know, the armchair quarterbacks that wanted to blame people hitting three-pointers on us and some stuff like that on the 2-3 zone. Like, I mean, it can happen in man, too. And yesterday was a perfect example.
There was a couple times, though, Joe, where they played good defense. You just some things are undefendable.
Some things are undefendable, yes. And that's the whole thing is you just can't allow – when teams make when you're struggling on offense, you know, and you and you're trying to match the other team's defense, and they're hitting shots like that, and then sometimes it can just take the life right out of you. You know, it's just like the one thing that I wish that we did a little bit better, because you could see body language, you could see people trying to overcompensate or maybe do too much, try to do too much because of the fact that, like, they get down, right? And all that really does is just, like, digs you deeper, right? Is it one of those things like, what, quicksand or something like that, where you try to get out and you sink further down in there? They just had to stay with what they're good at, stay with their game plan, and I just feel like that's where you start messing up. You turn the ball over, like you said, you take bad quick shots where no one's down there to even have a chance to get offensive rebounds, and then the next thing you know, they come down, hit another shot. Someone puts themselves out of position, easy layup. Next thing you know, they take a little 10-0 run where you're down double digits, and now you're down 25, and you're like, wow, what just happened? Right, like that's where you can't let it get to, no matter who you're playing.
It was agonizing to watch.
Like, absolutely.
I mean, nothing angers me like poor defense, can't hit shots, and just watching the spread grow. Right. For Syracuse basketball, like,
well, and but on top of that too, what you don't want to see is, I'm not saying they didn't try, right? But I mean, you could. There's a difference between good effort and bad effort. You know, there's a difference between, I mean, in football, on defense, you got a specific, you know, every play, you got a specific job to do. And if you do that job correctly, then you're supposed, somebody's going to make the tackle on the team, right? But if you want to go your own way and try to sack the quarterback or do your own thing every time, you could be hanging your teammates out to dry. So you're giving effort, but it's not good team effort. And I think that's kind of where we start to go. You start to see defensive lapses, and you start to see situations where it's a lot of man-to-man, like hero ball, trying to do things, you know, just all by yourselves. And it's just, it sucks because you get down that much and you want to make something happen, but there is no like 10-12 point play. You know, you just got to kind of keep your confidence and keep with your game plan and try to stop them and chip away. And it just seemed like we couldn't hit the shot, and then we couldn't get the stop, and it was over and over again. So, yeah, very, very tough to watch.
Yeah, it was frustrating, but, you know, I said that this would be a good kind of gauge where this team was going to be in ACC, and I don't know, thinking back on that. Because of the matchup thing, like I was talking about, and I thought about this during the game. It's just like we just struggle with this, and if everybody did it, we would struggle every game. Period.
Yeah.
It's just
thank God everybody doesn't play defense like Virginia. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, so. But I mean, you have to be able to shoot from the outside. You have to be hot. You have to be hot the whole game with Virginia. If you can be hot, or if you've got look.
You got to stop them. That's the problem. Their defense is so good that when their offense plays like that, then you're not going to beat them.
No.
There's no way.
No,
you're not going to beat a Virginia team that's shooting 54% from the floor.
No, you're not, Joe, but you're also not going to have a Virginia team that's going to be that hot.
Well, no, that's not going to happen every day too, right? So that's the whole thing. Is we play 10 times. That's happening 1 out of 10 times, right? 2 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
So
some of this stuff – Isaac McNeely did.
I mean, basketball, it is what it is, right? Like, basketball, sometimes you just have those days, right? I mean, it's – Judah didn't go from just scoring 33 to however much he had just because he's not good, right? 5 points. It had nothing to do with that. It's just they double-teamed him, and it just wasn't his day, right?
And
that's where other people have to step up.
Yeah. He just couldn't he couldn't get himself in a position to get the calls that he would normally get. He struggled to even have that. You know what I mean? So again, that's his game. And if he can't do any of it, he's going to struggle because he's not a proven outside shooter. He's had moments, but he's not there. And
right.
And it just, that's the reality of it. And what McNeely did yesterday is not normal. He probably won't have another game like that the rest of the year. And so,
yeah,
as tough as it is to take this loss.
Be against us again.
Well, yeah, well, maybe. As tough as it is to take this loss, I mean, especially for me, dude. I know way too many UVA fans. It sucks. It sucks. The bragging rights thing is important to me.
Yeah. I only know one.
Well, I've got a few here, and, you know, they were quiet yesterday, but, you know, I know I'm going to hear it. Either way, we'll move on, right? We got a couple couple more non-conference games yesterday. Did you happen to see, before we get into fan feedback, did you see what happened to Georgetown last night? Or did you hear about it? The last second shot? I wish I knew who made the shot. Last second shot with the game, they were down by two.
They played TCU, right?
They were down. TCU was down by two. They inbound the ball with like 2.7 seconds left at the opposite end, obviously, right? There was a foul with 2.7 seconds left at an 81-81 game, and then he hit both his shots. And so they inbound this ball, launched, one-handed launch, down past midcourt. Guy takes a couple steps and just launches the thing and banks a deep-ass three, like, and got it off and everything. He was on the line. He stepped out of bounds before he shot the ball. But when they were reviewing the reviewing the play, they were reviewing to see if he got the ball, if he got the shot off. I'm going, oh my gosh, he was on the line, he's out. Broadcaster's like, oh, he was on the line, he's out. That shot's not gonna count. Well, they come back and you could see the body language of the coaches, and you knew that something was gonna be, you know, there's gonna be some controversy because they can't review the stepping out of the bounds. They can only review if the shot was off. So
why?
That's what that was told. That's what was explained to the coaches. They can't review stepping out of bounds. I guess it's not a reviewable play at that point in the game.
No, that is stupid.
It is stupid, but it is hilarious. It's so funny. Come on. You know, I mean, geez, it couldn't happen to a better team or worse team. However you want to say it. And by the way, I talk smack right now, but they look pretty decent, by the way. I'm just saying. That being them being Georgetown, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And, of course, we play them Tuesday. Wait, no, I'm sorry. Saturday? A week from yesterday? So, anyways.
No, okay.
Yeah. Look, I don't know, man.
It was a tough one, dude.
Here's the thing again. We're in the situation where we're winning the games we should win, and we're losing the games and we're not expected to win.
Look, that's a switch from the last 2 years.
Well, only because we beat Colgate this year.
Yeah.
I hear you. I hear you.
I mean, at the end of the day, and I think we know that Tennessee and Gonzaga in Virginia are going to be tournament teams, and losses to them are not going to hurt us. So
I know that. I know. Do you know?
And it's still early. I mean, you have to be able to figure the crap out.
There was something I saw on Twitter. I think it, oh man, why do I do this to myself? Something in regards to the Quad 1 drought. Quad 1 win drought for Syracuse. It's staggering. It's really bad. It's really bad and awful. So, you know, it's been a couple few years since they've had a Quad 1 win. And between them and the football team, they haven't had been able to really hang their hats on much in a few years. They've been on the struggle bus hard. So,
yeah.
Anyways, well,
quad one wins are not easy to come by. That's for sure.
They're not easy to come by, but we get plenty of opportunities, and that's kind of my point. It's like you're bound to win one eventually, right? Like, what the hell's going on? Mike Norvell's statement on getting snubbed by the selection committee, this is going to be something that evolves, I think. FSU goes undefeated, wins their conference championship with a third-string quarterback, shows that they've got a team that deserves the right to be in the college football playoffs. And they get leapfrogged by Texas and Alabama. He said there's never been an undefeated Power 5 team that was denied an opportunity to play for a national championship over a one-loss team. There's a reason, because you have to earn it on the field. I don't care how much talent you have. I don't care what it looks like on a game or in the moment. You've got to get it done, and you have to have all the ability well to go finish. Yeah, and you have to have all the ability well go finish. That's what this team has done. So, yeah. What a crock of shit that is, by the way. And I'm just, you know, that's a crock of shit. They deserve to be in the college football playoffs. I don't care what string quarterback they're running right now. It doesn't matter. They've won the games without Jordan Travis. And if Jordan Travis is playing, they don't get snubbed. And I don't think that's how you look at these things. I don't think that's how you should look at any of that. I think it's obviously corrupt. That system's corrupt. AF.
No, of course.
Anyways.
Of course, dude. Anyways, come on. You shouldn't be. Yeah.
Shouldn't be what?
They weren't gonna leave out. That's the problem. So the issue that they have, and I guess it's just obviously next year it's gonna be different, right? We're not gonna have to worry about it. No, I think that eight
and you're not gonna have to worry about it. So just put in the teams that you know should be in based on what they did on the field, like Norvell says.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. Well, you'll have your Alabama next year. You'll have your Alabama. Calm your asses down. They'll be back.
Well, in what world did you think that they weren't gonna leave an SEC school out? They're gonna have a college. Did you have an SEC who's won like 13 of the last 15 national championships or some shit like that? In what world did you think they were gonna leave out an SEC team in the college football playoff? Because you know that's not happening.
Well, I guess politics. I guess not in a world where reality reigns. You know, you either make it or you don't.
Right, but then you have the people that, you know, they go with, well, they're just trying to get the best four teams in.
Yeah. Well,
but, I mean, like you said, it's unfortunate because at the end of the day, it's very difficult because you could have one or two losses, and by the end of the year with injuries and experience and certain things, you could be the best team. Doesn't mean that you're got the credentials to be in the top four, right? So yeah, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The fact that you have a team that went undefeated and won their championship. Because I know what the thing was going to say is that, okay. I guess the thing is what would they have done if Georgia would have won? Because I'd have loved to have seen what would have actually happened.
They would have maybe put Texas in and left it.
Or they would have left Florida State in.
Well, right. Those are the only two. Because
then you would have had four undefeated teams. The problem is they wanted to get an SEC school in because Alabama beat Georgia. Well, Alabama beat Georgia, you got to put Alabama in, right? Except for if you put Alabama in but not Texas, then you have an even bigger problem, right? Because Texas was one loss and went and they won their conference championship and they beat Alabama at Alabama at the beginning of the year. So you couldn't put Alabama over Texas.
Right.
Which is why Texas and Alabama both got there. So they both jumped Florida State, and I'm sure that the committee has a stupid reason for why they did.
Well, they're on the hot seat and they should be. So I just feel bad for Florida State because I feel like they should have went in, and it's not. I mean, I'll be over it in 5 minutes, but I hate corruption in sports, and I hate the politics and everything, and it ruins things, and it ruined it. I really don't care anymore. I really don't about the college football playoffs for this year. Stupid. All right. It's time to hear from you.
It's time to hear from you, the loud mouths from the loud house.
All right, you guys know what to do. At the end of the game, I ask for your thoughts on said game. Leave them on Facebook and Twitter. We talk about them here. Obviously not what we all expected, or maybe some of us, but I expect to be a little bit closer than that. Let's start on Twitter, Joe. And I'm just kind of searching around. A lot of these are real short answers, so it makes you wonder. Let's see. Let's go down here.
Yeah, a lot of short ones.
Yeah, at Mike S74855165. GMAC needs to teach the whole team how to shoot. Many flawed shooting techniques. Taylor, Starling, Mintz, Williams. Bell can shoot if wide open. We can't shoot. Long season, I fear. Boeheim looked relaxed in Chapel Hill, better behind the mic than getting smoked on the court. That was all around just very positive things to say. Just like we've talked about numerous times, man, if Judah is not going to be the star on the court because of one reason or another, and he's getting double and triple teamed and it's a bad matchup for him and he's having a bad day, someone else has got to step up. And it never happened. You know, you had what JJ Starling did the best he could. You know, it was just a game ago where we were talking about how bad Starling played and he came out and led his team in scoring. So it's
a little too late for him, though, man.
I understand that, Joe, but I'm just saying, you know, that's my point, is that that's the irony of the whole of just being a Syracuse fan. You know what I mean? It's like that's how we have to live every one of these games. So, I mean, there's just, unfortunately, just,
well, dude, it's matchups, right? When you look at it, it's like, okay, you know, some people might be okay, well, you know, all we got to do is stop Judah Mintz and then stop Chris Bell from shooting, and then we're going to be able to, well, I mean, first off, you got to be able to have the pieces to do it, right? So it's easier said than done. Obviously, LSU didn't have a Reese Beekman that could keep Judah like that. But also, you know, every time they tried to do something, they would just try to double him, and then somebody's open, except for that nobody came open, right? There's not enough movement early to allow these guys to get open when they start double teaming and stuff like that. And because Virginia's got such a good defense that, you know, it's hard to even pass out of a double team sometimes. So you got to do the safe thing and back it away and then start your offense all over again. So, McLeod. I mean, yeah, it was just it was rough overall. And, again, we've seen Virginia do this to, you know, us before. So, yeah.
Yeah, but, like all of the times.
Most of the times, yeah.
Let's see. At Koff 1007, looked awful. Taylor needs less minutes. Benny needs more minutes. Cuff needs more minutes. Copeland needs less minutes. What did you see from Benny that you would think that he deserves more minutes? Like, not even just yesterday, but like this year, last year. I'm confused. That's ridiculous. Taylor struggled. Absolutely. He's kind of a struggler, but we don't know. Obviously he's getting these minutes. They're seeing something in practice that's making them believe that it's only a matter of time before he breaks out and does something. Right. So, if I'm going to question any of those, it's that, but, it's just, they're going, you heard coach in the montage talk about going 8 or 9 deep and being able to do that. He's still figuring it out. You got to think too. You know, this is his first year as a head coach and being able to put these pieces together and figure these rotations out. And, you know, you're playing a team, by the way, didn't they just beat Texas A&M? Wasn't Texas A&M, aren't they ranked 14th? They were. I'm talking about UVA. And they beat them, They're coming off of a tough loss that knocked them out of the top 25, but they were ranked 24th. So expect to see them back in the top 25 probably tomorrow, if I had to guess. And so you're playing one of the best teams in the country with a lot of talent on it. ACC Defensive Player of the Year shuts down your star player. It's all about being able to step up without panicking. And that was the difference yesterday, was the panic. It's just like, you know, at the end of the half, being down by 15, it was like, ugh, jeez. You know, it happened so fast towards the end of the half that it was just, they were just taking bad shots. I mean, coach said just that in his presser. They were rushing shots, so they're playing from behind. You can't do that. You got to be more composed than that. And it's a young team. So.
Yeah, no, they're definitely a young team. And I know that, you know, Benny, he brought some energy off the bench. I thought he was looking for a shot and stuff like that. But it's still, I mean, like I said, it's hard because it's not like they're not trying. It's just, like I said, sometimes it just looks like they have lapses in judgment, lapses in what they're supposed to be doing. And I don't know. That's something that's definitely got to get fixed. And obviously too, we need to get better. A lot better at, you know, getting baskets off of assists, you know, the way that it's just tough to come off an LSU game and then, you know, go watch that Virginia game. And obviously I know that that's going to be more difficult against a Virginia defense, but still just a lot of standing around, still just a lot of going and having a one-on-one to get your own shot. And I mean, sometimes you're going to have to do that, but, you know, you got to open up sometimes one thing with another. And if, you know, that's not working, then they got to figure something else out. So still early, still young. We got to figure out the roles. And I wouldn't be so quick to call for people's minutes and playing time based upon, you know, a game against
eight games in against a team that's going to be ranked tomorrow. Probably. I mean, what do you.
Yeah, we know how it's tough to play Virginia. We know how they play defense. I mean. And then they shot 54%. I mean, to be honest.
Yeah, and 57 from three, which is, I mean, how do you...
12 of 21. Like, yeah, you can't. Yeah. That's the thing. There's no...
It's season high. You get a season high, and you get a season high. Season highs.
Yeah. Niagara or Cornell does that to us. We're losing, right? So, right. I mean...
Season year. at Rescue Dog 06023 through eight games, it's pretty evident this is going to be a roller coaster season. Look legit one game, like crap the next. One thing I would like to see more of is consistent effort. There was none of that today, and that needs to be the norm, not just when the team's playing well. I mean, there's some. Yeah. I would buy that. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's a perfectly reasonable statement, though.
Right.
So it was hard to judge effort yesterday. I mean, it really was.
That's what I'm saying is that especially when, because like I said, when you get down to where you're like under 20 minutes or sorry, under 10 minutes, you know, 8-7 minutes left in the game,
you
and they're
points.
Just bombing these threes, right. And they're up 30. They're, like, that's this disheartening. Like, you know, as a player, that it doesn't really matter at that point. Like, it does, you know, in their world, it does. The coaches are still coaching them. They still want to see the effort, and it's still playing together to get better. But in a player's mind, you know what the deal is. So it's hard. When you have a bad game and it's been that tough, and then all of a sudden they start hitting everything, and then it gets to a point where you know that you're not going to win. It's hard to play that last 5, 6, 7 minutes hard, like you're actually playing for something. But realistically, you're playing for, you know, a role and possibly minutes for your team. So that's the way they got to look at it. It's just like you said, it's tough to gauge effort because you could give effort. Like I say all the time, you can give effort, but bad effort still isn't going to get you the results that you want. Doesn't mean that you weren't trying.
Yeah, at Hughes Waterboy, to flush it and bounce back Tuesday night. This season may be full of learning experiences and growth. I mean, like we said, coming into just the season in general was that, you know, I'm not going to put expectations on this team. Kind of like to wait it out and see how it just pans out. You know, we don't know coming into this season what kind of coach Adrian Autry is going to be. And There's a lot to figure out, especially this early in the season. And I think the talent's there. I like the depth. I just there's certain things that got to get better. And one of them's at center, and the other one is some consistency just in general and making shots. It's kind of like, to some degree, just picking up where we left off last year, to some degree. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, it's the same problems.
Yeah. You got a lot of negative stuff?
I don't. I got one from David, our buddy David. Especially in the first half, too many difficult shots attempted that were almost always contested. Taylor doesn't provide anything offensively except handling out around the perimeter. Uninspiring game, but still hopeful on a very good season. Four games to figure it out before Pitt. And, you know, that, you know, like I said, watching Georgetown last night, they mean that's not going to be a Patrick Ewing gimme game like they've kind of been. I know that they just weren't that good. And
they've still been tough for us.
They were still tough even under Ewing when they were terrible, right? So, but you know, they actually looked at the eye test. I mean, it was the first time me taking a look at them last night against TCU, despite the loss. But you know, they looked like they have some good talent on that team. So that's not a gimme either. And you can just, you know, obviously, I don't know what the hell Oregon's doing this year, but you got that too. So, you know, you've got Cornell and you've got Niagara, and that's pretty much it, I think, to be fair.
Oregon just beat somebody.
They're 5-2. They just beat Michigan.
Yeah, they beat Michigan last night.
Yep. So, you know, not another game that could be surprisingly difficult. Problem, you know, we're just going to have to see. And unfortunately, like, time's running out on figuring it out too. All of a sudden, here we are going into our ninth game against Cornell, and then you've got Georgetown, Oregon, Niagara, and then Pitt, Duke, Boston College, UNC, Pitt again, Miami, Florida State, NC State. I mean, that's going to be it. There goes the easy shit, and on comes the gauntlet. So anyway,
yeah.
What do you got on Facebook? Anything?
I mean, some negative. I mean, bad outing all around, no chemistry. 7-4 doesn't equal athletic, not optimistic about ACC success. Chuck, embarrassing. JT struggles with a real defender now in multiple games. Brown should be starting. Benny is earning his spot back, in my opinion. Why can't JJ and Judah click on the same day? Free throws matter. So that was another thing. Free throws, you know, some games they look good, some games they don't look so good. So.
Yeah, I know. But I feel, though, that this team's a decent free throw shooting team. It's just, you know, even Mintz missed one yesterday. I mean, he's pretty much, you know, he only had two. But, you know, with that said, I mean, he's pretty automatic at the line, and you don't expect him to miss. But 68%, it's not great. At least they got there. I'm surprised they got there, seeing that Judah was having a very difficult time getting there. I thought that would be the one silver lining is Judah being able to get some of these guys in some kind of foul trouble, and he couldn't even muster that up. So anyways, at 5 minute millennial, Judah can't disappear against good teams, and JJ needs to drive more often. Not much you can do when the other team shoots 60% from three. Just need more fluidity on offense. And that's kind of to your point, Joe, and you get that standing around shit and guys, you know, taking the game into their own hands and shooting fast in the shot clock and things like that. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
So Chris on Facebook, we don't have an identity of this team or coach, which is understandable since this is his first head coaching gig. Having four guards that aren't great or consistent shooters makes no sense to me. Malik Brown does so many good things. I think he should start at the 4 or 5. Benny should start. However, I have no idea what the issues were with him and coach. It's going to take time to understand who this team is. A lot of comments saying that Benny should be getting more playing time or start.
I know. I'm not. I love Benny Williams. I'm not seeing that, though. MF Brightside mentioned so team lacks identity, too. So.
Yeah. Our boy Jesse.
What do you think about that? Am I wrong?
I mean, yeah, I agree. There's people you have to worry about, but at the end of the day, I mean, it's the identity is Judah.
Right.
At this point, and he's going to have to figure it out, and we're going to have to, other people are going to have to step it up because every team's going to try to stop him. Not every team's going to be able to, but I mean, yeah, we're definitely going to have to figure something out there for sure.
Yeah.
Our buddy Jesse, Tough Fan Jesse on Facebook, tough road game.
You can talk over the clapping, Joe. Go ahead.
Wish we pressed a little more. It seemed to bother them. We will / would be able to do so more effectively if Benny gets more playing time. Not sure what's up, but he's our second best player at this point, and it needs to get resolved. But glad to hear we'll get a chance in a couple of weeks.
There was a...
But glad to hear we'll get chance in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So they kind of... They said that on the broadcast. I don't know how true that is. What do they know?
Well, they said they made the team. Or they made the... made the team. Duh. You got a scholarship. Made the trip with the team.
Yeah.
And they said that he's... Their official from the school said that he's a couple weeks away from practicing, right? So he should be... I mean, it made it sound like they talked to somebody that knows... that he's not out for the rest of the season. So
right, right. And all we got was indefinitely, which gives you hope. Right. So
hope that there's a chance.
Yeah. So hope that there's a chance for chance. So there was a couple times too. I mean, he talks about the press and one of those comments that you just talked about.
Yeah.
I mean, they got burned on the press pretty good. Was it twice? I can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple times.
And you hadn't seen that this year, really. I thought the press has been excellent so far this year. When they've used
it has been, but like I said, that was kind of what I was talking about with some laps in defense and in coverage and stuff like that. Is because of it they got some easy buckets when stuff started getting out of control. So,
all right, well, yeah. Let's move on. You know,
my brother Alex.
Oh boy!
About the only damn positive one. Year's not over, guys.
Hold on, Alex with the positive one. All right, let's hear it.
Yeah, he said, "Year's not over, guys." LOL. Guys already saying we're mediocre. All of our losses have been to ranked teams, pretty much. Got a lot of the year left to see if this team can gel.
He's absolutely right. I mean, I'd be shocked if UVA wasn't ranked tomorrow. And you know, and then you got who the hell was it? Tennessee and Gonzaga. So, yeah. I mean, there's no reason to panic. You know why it sucks so much? It's because it was UVA. That's why it sucks. That's why it feels different. It's because it was an ACC game and it was UVA. That's why. But you can't let that blind you from the fact that this team is talented. They're still trying to figure some things out, but they are talented as hell. Judah is going to be a superstar, and you know, it's going to take a UVA type defense to just squelch any chance that Judah has at being Judah. And that's that. It's just, you know, unfortunately, there's just no other team that's we're going to play that's going to play like exactly like this. Like I said, I'll make the point again, like coach said, actually, it's his point. This defense is this defense. Doesn't matter who's playing it. It's just that well coached and they're that disciplined. There's no panic in these guys on offense either. They just play. And when it's time to go, they go. and they shortened the game. I'm shocked they got 84 points. I mean, I really am. That was the one thing I was like, holy shit. UVA is going to get into the 80s. So, anyways, don't let this game deter you from the fact that this team has got not only all season to play, but they got some incredible players playing. So, and we're just going to have to wait and see. But Coach figuring it out, too. It's just one. It's, I mean, I don't know where everybody's expectations were. So, looks very similar to what we saw last year, but, you know, to overcome an early 20. How much were they down by in Colgate?
24.
24, yeah. To overcome there, it shows you a little bit of something that's different this year, I think. And you lose that game and we're mirrored. But I don't think that's the case. So we'll have to see. All right. Yeah. I mentioned Syracuse will host the Big Red this Tuesday at 8 p.m. The all-time series between Syracuse and Cornell sits at 95-31 in favor of the Orange. SU currently on a 42-game win streak in the series. Dates back, that win streak dates back all the way to 1969. So quite some time. There was a pause in play a couple different times, but not, you know, still they've been playing every year since like to the late 90s so far. And there was a lapse sometime, in the 90s. The Syracuse Orange and Cornell Big Red basketball series goes back to the first season of Orange varsity basketball. They played in the second game Syracuse ever played, and the Orangemen will beat Cornell 18-15 for the first win in Syracuse basketball history. The Orangemen won the first three games of the series. That little tidbit from orangehoops.org. Last year, win 78-63. Mintz, Gerard, Edwards, Bell, and Williams, you're starting five. Gerard with 19 points and Edwards with 12 rebounds. Cornell sitting in first place right now in the Ivy League with a 7-1 record, and they're currently on a 4-game win streak after defeating Lafayette 79-71 yesterday afternoon. They're led in scoring by Sean Hansen. He's averaging 12.4 points a game. Cooper Nord's averaging right at about 12 points a game, and he also leads the team in threes, 22 or 45. That's good enough for 49%. Chris Mannon follows them up in scoring with 10.8 points a game. So they've got like six guys who are scoring significant, I think, up close to 10 points a game. But those are your top three. And 22 of 45 from behind the arc is pretty damn good. So at 49%, it's pretty excellent. So they're going to have to obviously not get McNeely'd.
Yeah.
I don't foresee that in this game. I mean, it is Cornell after all, but seems like they are a little bit better than what we've come accustomed to, at least just by, you know, what we know so far this year. I think they got a couple better guys on there, but anyway, Joe, and I mean, you can look at their schedule. I mean, I lost to George Mason. And went over Monmouth. I don't know where Monmouth stands these days. But anyway.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I look back at, you know, their players from last year's game when we played Cornell. And they only really lost, what I think, Dolan, I think, was a starter. They lost him. They pretty much got everybody back. Nord and Nix both have been starting this year, and they were both freshmen last year. So Boothby and Williams started last year against us, and now those guys are coming off the bench. So obviously Nord with his 3-point shooting and what Nix brings to the table, you know, they obviously jumped through there. But obviously on top of that, Gray is a good defensive guard. It's a senior. You know, you got a lot of seniors and juniors. Raglan Jr. is 6'8", coming off the bench. He's kind of a big body down there. And like you said, Hansen, he's a leading scorer. He's 6'9". Like I said, Boothby coming off the bench, 6'7". So they got a little bit of size. I think that this is one of those games where we might be able to see both of our centers be a little bit successful against this team. I don't know if they're going to be able to guard the height of Naheem the way that Virginia did, obviously. But yeah, no, they're a deeper team that's got, what, like eight guys that are averaging over 16 minutes a game, nine guys with over 10. So it seems to me like, you know, they throw guys out there, you know, in waves, and there's a lot of guys that, like you said, this average 7, 9, 10 points a game. So they share the ball, and, you know, 7-1, I know they haven't played the best teams, but 7-1, 7-1, you know, I know they beat Fordham. They're an A-10 team. So they've beaten a couple teams that are, you know, traditionally better than the teams that are in their conference. So, we beat them last year, I think, by 15, something like that.
Yes, 15, 78 to 63.
Yeah, but, you know, this team is they're better than last year, and I think that that we might be too. It's just I think we're going to be all right. It's just we can't sleep on them. We still got to play tough, and but they don't have a Reese Beekman over there that's going to stop Judah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, as far as what I see, I think Hansen will have a little bit of trouble with our height. But, you know, it's obviously keeping Nord and them off the 3-point line and being able to obviously get to the hole and finish and get some points for ourselves on offense.
Yeah, I don't see them being an issue, but like you said, don't look past them yet. And just make sure that all Syracuse got to do is do what they've been doing. If they do what they've been doing, they're going to be fine. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. But
right. And it's just basketball is a weird sport because crap like yesterday could happen. You know, I mean, you could play really bad. You could just not show up, you know, one game, or you could have somebody like a McNeely go off for the other team and make it extremely difficult for you to even be in the game. So obviously we've had the Colgates and the stuff like that, and they do have 3-point shooters. And like I said, when you have that type of experience with the amount of seniors and juniors that they have, because essentially you take Nord and Nix off the board and the other 6-7 players that play are seniors and juniors. And, you know, they bring back pretty much everybody but one person from last year's team. So, and winning is infectious too. I mean, they're 7-1. So if what you're doing works and you're winning, then the confidence goes up. Confidence goes up, and you start thinking, you know, some teams think that you get that confidence, like you're better than what you really are. But realistically, every basketball game, it's, you know, your matchups and obviously who's on and who's not and which way the ball bounces sometimes. So
we're shooting 51% as a team for the year from the field right now. So, I mean, they're making shots, and it's, they got some offensive weapons and they're scoring. It's what's
and that's the other thing too, is you can't, I mean, I remember, you know, playing in some leagues, you know, growing up, you know, just some rec leagues when you get older, you know, and I mean, some of the best teams in those leagues, you know, you show up and there's a team of older guys, you think, you know, when you're in your younger 20s, oh, we're going to run them out the gym. But these teams, some of the best teams are guys that are older guys in their late 30s and their 40s that have played together for so long. You go out there and just everything works because they know exactly what each other's going to do and how they play with each other. And, you know, they make basketball a lot easier than just a bunch of young kids running around that might be their first year playing with each other. Right. So, so that type of stuff does matter for sure.
All right. Dom wanted to get in. Of course, he's been here, but he didn't feel like getting in during the fan feedback segment. But he wanted to interrupt the Cornell preview, which is fine. Dom,
what is there much to preview?
not really.
Right, well, so. Look, 2 years previous, we didn't think there was much to preview with Colgate either. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that well,
this Cornell team, man, this is the best Cornell team Syracuse is going to see in decades.
Decades,
wasn't there
bro.
One that Jimmy was on that was just that was just as good that we were a little bit worried about?
Yeah, because of Jimmy.
Yeah.
And he made a three. I think his first shot that he took in the game.
He trolled his dad.
Yeah, made a three right in front of his pops. So
Yes. So it doesn't. Basketball season doesn't matter. It's still football season. We got a new coach. And a bowl game.
No, actually, we got one game left. Do we know where we're playing yet?
We'll know soon. No. They're going through that right now.
Yeah, I've seen. I've seen five predictions. They're all different. So. Please spare me the predictions and let's wait and see what happens when it happens. But anyway, what's up, Don?
Normally, I don't have a rooting interest. I just want to watch him or listen to him. You know what I mean? But if it's Fenway this year, there's a good chance I'll be there, which is pretty cool. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I want to talk about is Fran and because basketball doesn't matter because it's Red's first year. This is the way I'm looking at it. And let's just try to enjoy Judah Mintz. This is the enjoy Judah Mintz year.
That's what we said last show. I mean, hopefully he shows up and does what he needs to do, but this is probably most likely going to be it. So enjoy what you got while you got it. We can go from there.
Yep. If they make the dance this year, it's a plus. If they don't, like Red is learning how to be a head coach. This is it's growing pains. I know Syracuse fans may not want to hear that because they've had so many years of Jim, but this is what private school programs go through. Right? Whenever you get a coach that has never coached before, it is what it is.
So
I'm just glad. I'm glad that it's Red and not somebody that we never heard of before, because I think a game like this against Virginia, who was Coach Joe Schmo. Who was the best assistant at, Villanova or something, I think it would be, your feedback would be a lot worse, I'll tell you that.
I mean, yeah, it would just be more negative, yeah, for sure. What's going on? Fran's in Syracuse. What would you like to say?
Fran is in Syracuse now. We'll probably know who the coaches are until you have a show on again. So Joe, the running backs coach with the Giants, do you even know who he is? Because that sounds like who the offensive coordinator is going to be.
No, I have no idea.
Okay. Because Emily Liker, I guess, spoke with one of the verbal commits, the offensive lineman, Noah Roshak. Did you guys see the story?
I saw.
Yep.
Yeah, there was a phone call made that the offensive coordinators come from the NFL and the defensive coordinators come from SEC.
Yes, the SEC coach that people are saying there's two or three that it could be, but everyone's Mike speculating Kafka. That it, huh?
Yeah, well, Mike Kafka. Yeah, Coach Kafka. That's right.
Yeah, Mike. Well, they're speculating that it's Fran's best friend from childhood from Camden, who is apparently the second best recruiter in the country and the current defensive line coach at Texas A&M. I personally don't think it's going to be him. He makes $1.1 million a year now as co-defensive coordinator and defensive line coach, but that would be kind of.
There's going to have to be a pay cut if he's coming from the NFL anyway.
Right. Well, no, this is Texas A&M, this guy here. So,
it's
going to be interesting.
Oh, the defensive guy, yeah.
Yes. They sounds like he told the recruits that Coach Nunzio is staying. Jason Beck's wife is all but alluding that they're gone, which I understand, that's way the business is and stuff, but I feel bad for them because their kids seem to be immersed in the Syracuse area and everything. But anyway, Sean, I know you're a wait and see kind of guy. You don't even care about the recruiting aspect.
I'm a keep my powder dry, and I'm in the show me phase of my Syracuse fandom. So I want to see what happens. I don't know enough. I found out who a Fran Brown was a week ago. So
yeah.
I'd never even heard of the guy. And
I like this stuff. I'm a hot stove guy, even with baseball. Like, to me, the off season sometimes is more fun than during the season.
Yeah, so, you can only have your heart broken so many times by recruits to where you know what, when they're playing, then. That's when I'll learn their name.
I got you guys. All right. Well, You guys have a good one. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Dom. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of speculation of who's coming and who's going. And, you know, well, let's just – we'll find out. I mean, we'll find out, you know, what bowl we're going to today. Fran's in Syracuse. I'm sure we'll find out soon enough, you know, here shortly what his staff is going to be looking like. And, you know, you hear about big recruits putting Syracuse on their list. And then, you know, you got some decommits. And so you got a little bit of everything. I don't think there's really a whole lot to take away from it right now, I guess is what I'm saying. I mean, there's actually nothing to take away because you just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Right. Like we've seen 5 stars not do nothing. We've seen 3 stars, you know, turn into first year players and NFL players after 2 years. Like you just don't know, you know, it's, you know, the rankings and recruiting, it's all flawed. It's all, you know, it's the systems that you fit in, the places that you go, the coaches that coach you up. Right. Right? Exactly. I mean, there's just so many
things. What your competition is, all that. You mean,
right.
We remember Josh Huff, right? Running back. Yep. Remember this guy with the tree trunk legs, just bowling people over. And I don't know if he played one snap at Syracuse.
Yeah, no. And I remember Mike Hart, who was class D, running all over kids every single weekend. And Syracuse didn't even offer him a scholarship because they thought he was too small. And didn't play against good enough competition, and he ended up going to Michigan and played in the NFL. So all that to say is, well, you know, the coaches, you don't know what's going on. You have no idea. We have a favorable schedule next year, and if this guy can come in with his momentum and he can get some guys, you know, come in for next year, get some transfers, get people excited about the program. I mean, we have a very manageable schedule to where, you know, we get some decent transfers that come in, then, you know, he might be a one and done himself. So you never really know. My thing is again, I would just like to get to a point to where we're not the stepping stone, right? We're not the team that's getting the kids and developing them and then letting them go to LSU and Ohio State and West Virginia, you know, for basketball or
the stepping stone for players and coaches.
It's, yeah, for players and coaches, yeah, because that's the other thing that we have failed to talk about as far as his coaches and coordinators as well. Is Dino, for the 8 years that he's been here, he's had to deal with that stuff. He's lost coordinators constant. And coaches to other schools because we can't pay up. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, something's got to change. Otherwise, nothing's going to change. And that thing that has to change is obviously – player and coach retention, talent retention on both sides. And if it doesn't, like I said, this is over and over again. This is what we're going to be beating a dead horse about every single damn time we talk about this, right? And again, he's going to be young. He's going to be energetic, new. He can bring and breed some life into it. But how long does he stay? How long does he keep that energy before he's like, well, damn, I'm not getting the same resources and the same investment from community and from the university that I did at some of the other places that I was like, and then that starts to wear on him to the point where he leaves. Right. And then two, is he even coming here to start something? That's the one thing is I don't want, again, our school to be a stepping stone. But that was the one reason why I was kind of with Babers a little bit, because he chose to stay here. He was loyal to Syracuse and he was willing to stay here, not take a pay raise and go be a coach somewhere else because he wanted to start something at Syracuse. And he didn't get the investment and the resources he needed to make that happen. And I feel bad because I don't want this to be a situation. Okay, yeah, we can be excited. Yeah, young, up and comer. Everyone's looking at him, right? Just like some of these other coordinators that are talking about. Okay, well, if he does good in Syracuse, then everyone's going to be looking for him and everyone's going to be able to pay more. So good. That's great. We'll have him for what? 2 years? Have a good 2 years, 3 years, and then what? You start it all over again? Like, if that's what fans want, I guess. But I mean, to hit a restart every 3 to 4 years and there'll be a change of culture or a change of scheme or a change of, you know, where are we recruiting out of, then, I mean, that's no fun either.
Yeah.
I mean, you want something consistent. You want something that can be sustained.
And we don't know. Maybe it will. Maybe this dude becomes a freaking, you know, he's young enough, man. Maybe he just becomes Syracuse through and through. Who knows?
I mean, dude, I get it, but it's all about the Benjamins at some point, bro.
I know, yeah. Yeah, well, Syracuse has the Benjamins. Let's be honest. They have the money. Will they pay?
Mm-hmm.
They're going, I mean, at some point, you know.
Are they
going
to keep taking?
I mean, you have
the money.
Maybe they're fine.
Taxing everybody.
Maybe Syracuse is fine with, you know, a couple good seasons and having to restart. Maybe they're fine with that. Maybe they're fine with players and coaches coming to Syracuse to get notoriety and get in the spotlight and then move on to somewhere else for better play or bigger, better school or with better resources. Maybe they're fine with all that. I have no idea. You know,
well, they're fine with it.
It seems like they've been fine with it. Right. Exactly.
Well, of course they're fine with it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in a situation where wins and losses, I mean, sadly, well, you want to look at it. If wins and losses matter, then Wild Hack should be gone.
I was just going to say, you know, at what point do wins and losses affect a Wild Hack?
I mean, that's fine and dandy, but a men's soccer championship isn't keeping his job.
No, I mean, how much money did men's soccer bring in last year?
Probably negative.
Probably subsidized by football or basketball.
Right. That's my whole point. Yeah. So, obviously, there's something going on there.
Not to take anything away from the soccer team.
No. Not to take anything away from any other sports. I want all the sports to be successful.
Or,
you know what I mean?
Or like, Ian McIntyre.
Huh?
Or Ian McIntyre, the coach.
Yeah, yeah, Max. I don't matter to me. I don't care if it's damn, you know, lacrosse, you know, women's field hockey, cross country, Justin Knight, Olympic hopeful.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. I mean, I want those guys to be successful, but you got to be honest when you talk about what brings in the money.
The now, Justin Knight, I think, is what he's called.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I only know one, so I didn't need to but you know
exactly. Well, there
so,
you go.
But yeah, no, it's just, it's like I said, it's just one of those things where I don't, it's, we know, we all know what it is, but it's like, I don't even want to bring that up again, so I'm not going to, but essentially right. At what point are the community and the fans going to hold the university accountable and say, okay, well, where's all this money? Well, you guys make this, 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 and this, where's it going?
Well, to be fair. Just to play devil's advocate here, I'm Joe. You and I agree probably too much on this, and it's just that's just how it worked out,
right?
But let's just say things change, then we're good. I mean, right? I mean, we're criticizing for no reason right now, is what I'm saying. Like it could change this past year. Maybe something clicked. Maybe Severd's like, look, dude. We've got to invest more money in this. We don't want to have a coaching carousel with offensive, defensive coordinators, all of these other quarterback coaches, all these guys, you know, rotating year in and year out with no consistency. Let's just do this one more time right and see what happens. And let's throw everything we can at it. And we've got the NIL building, and we can get the players we need. And we're going to get this young 40-year-old coach who's extremely popular and likable amongst recruits and everybody else, right? Well-respected. And we're going to start with this young guy, and we're going to see where he could take the program and give him all of the resources possible to make sure that there's no excuses, and then let him rip.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it should have been. It should have been, yeah, right? No, so, I mean, again, no.
So what you're saying is you're skeptical just because of what you know, like the track record is not there for you to put all your apples in the basket and just believe right. That things.
And that's
changed.
What I mean by like, when you say like, well, maybe we're wrong in playing devil's advocate. I get what you're saying, but we're not wrong about what we've talked about in the past. I mean, at the end of the day, there's people talking. Andrea Adelson, ESPN is talking about this stuff, right? She said she's had personal conversation with Dino in the past about being able to keep coordinators and assistants and stuff like that. And it's blatantly obvious, right? We saw Jesse Edwards leave because we couldn't keep him here.
Jesse Edwards told us all that Syracuse wasn't interested in it.
Right. We saw Jahad Carter, Deuce Chestnut, four or five starters on our football team go somewhere else and play less. So, and we didn't get in a bunch of crazy transfers to the point to where, I mean, we brought in guys that were wanted playing time, and they're young, and they didn't get playing time from the big school that they went to. We didn't go out and buy a transfer that's like, oh, this guy's a dominant guy that's going to come in and be a starter, right? I mean, one or two, maybe. I don't know. I mean, Wallabaugh, all those guys, I mean, they came from bigger schools, Kentucky, Notre Dame, Nebraska, and but they were younger. They didn't play at their old school. Therefore, I don't see us giving them a crap ton of money to come to play to our school because they hadn't proven anything yet. The people that get paid are the kids that have been in college a couple of years and have proven that they can actually come in and they can help. They're already developed and they can help a Power Five team get to a really good bowl or try to have a successful season, right? We didn't get those type of transfers. So, again, we're not lying
about
what
Louisville did
this
year.
That's
what Louisville did this year.
Yep, 100%. So, I mean, we know what has happened in the past 8 years, and that's why, like I said, that's why the whole Babers thing is difficult, because I don't want to just go off of wins and losses or some bad decisions that he made in-game, right? Like, I mean, he lost coaches that, you know, they had things figured out, okay? They know their job. They know I know my job. You know what each other's going to do, good communication, and, you know, work goes a lot better. I mean, that's the same thing with coaching. And when you got your guys, you got your guys, right? And it seemed to me like Dino had his guys when they went 10-3. And then he lost a lot of those guys. So, and he's been losing guys ever since. I mean, there's a big handful of coaches on this team this year where it was their first year. So it's hard to just go and start working together with one, you know, with new people, like just 1 year. I mean, you got to figure out how they work, how they like to do things. You all got to come together and make it work. So yeah, it's not easy. So, you know, I think that that's a big thing that's underlooked, you know, between that and between the fact that we didn't have NIL to be competitive and just the fact that, like I said, Dino was just a loyal guy. Like, he was going to retire at Syracuse.
Yeah, he would have. Like you said, you mentioned the last show. I mean, he had an opportunity to leave after that 10-1 season, and he didn't, or 10-3 season, but he didn't. And, he stayed because he felt like he was building something, and, you know, he gets canned a couple years later. A couple tough years later, let's be honest, right?
Well, and that's, I think, but again, those, what was that? That was COVID, right? So you had an interruption of craziness, and let's just say that, you know, Syracuse University probably didn't handle COVID as good as some other universities in states. And then on top of that, the NIL, you know, now it's legal. I heard that the other day. That's what NIL stands for. But
yeah,
but it came, that started coming out, and now you got teams and, you know, communities and universities and donors and stuff going and basically buying players, recruiting players with money. And it's just the wild, wild west. And we didn't want to just dump right in, right? Everybody else kind of jumped right in. And we were still sitting there for a couple of years, dipping our toes in the pool, making sure that the temperature was good, right? Like, I just – and now we're here. So we had a guy that could have left, stayed loyal, couldn't retain his coaches or his players, and didn't get – and then they just didn't invest in the program that the way that they could have, like a lot of other schools and universities did. So that's, to me, is just – that's why it's so tough, because I think that Dino deserved better – from the university. He deserved better investments and better resources than what he received. And now he's the one that's fallen on the sword. So,
well, with that said, and that aside, we're looking into a new era. By the way, at Salty Warrior says, you guys sound surprisingly negative. I'm not sure if we said anything negative or if we just,
we're kind of calling it how we've seen it
and that what's happened up to this point. Obviously, I remain optimistic because we don't know, and I'm not speculating on. Basically, I think the most important thing to take out of anything that we say or have said is that things need to change for things to get better. And if nothing changes, nothing's going to get better. You can bring in any fresh face you want. And if the school isn't putting this as a priority, nothing's going to change. And the reason
it might be short term.
It could be, well, next year is going to be a perfect example of a short term gain because of the schedule and because just because that gives an opportunity to really thrive. And, you know, I know that there were some decommits and who knows, he brings in a couple of people, hit the transfer portal and all of those short term gains can be really, really, can show through really good next year.
Right.
And
well, I mean, dude, look, the fear,
but you bring up a legit fear of losing a Fran Brown. Now that's, look, this is totally speculation. Like if he goes and has a wildly successful season and he becomes a household name in ACC, what stops anybody from waving a bigger carrot in front of someone's face to have them jump ship? I mean, money talks, bullshit walks. I mean, that's the name of the game. It's through and through. We've lost offense coordinators, defense coordinators because of this stuff. It's not a loyalty thing. What loyalty would Fran Brown have after 1 year? To
other than maybe
to the school, to the fans, to anybody. Maybe recruits.
No, not the school or the fans. Probably the coaches and players that he brought
right.
here.
Right.
Would be the
right.
only thing, and, right? And I not, think a lot of those people know that, and a lot of people they can, right? And a lot of people know that it's business as well, right? And like you said, they can follow him. Think about it this way, man. Like, you remember when Babers came in and he had that speech, right, in the basketball court, and everyone was fired up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was like he came in and we beat a ranked Virginia Tech team, right? Next year we beat we beat Florida State, and then we ended up beating Clemson 1 year, right? And then we go and we win 10 games. Those first 3 years was filled with excitement. New energy.
Promise. Yeah.
Promise. We competed against, you know, some bigger schools. We had some upset wins. We had a 10-win season, right? And then all of a sudden, you see it start to go down. And that was because there wasn't the investment and wasn't the things that our university didn't jump and do the things that other universities did to take advantage of the new rules. And it's blatantly obvious, blatantly evident. And it happened pretty much overnight. Well, 1 or 2 years because of the COVID, right? With all the COVID rules and the COVID, you know, red shirts and get an extra, you get an extra year, you get an extra year and NIL and all that, yeah. You know,
we still haven't cycled through the COVID extra year bullshit.
These guys are getting extra years like they're in freaking Oprah, but it's just, I mean, it was blatantly obvious what happened. And then you just see a guy that you start to see it. He starts wearing it on his face because he knows he's doing the best he can do. And the best he can do without NIL money to retain talent in coaches and players is going to come to basically where we've been. I actually am surprised that we've been to two bowl games 2 years in a row because of this fact. So to be perfectly honest with you, with the resources and the investments that he's gotten, getting to a bowl game is a success for him. It is a success for the school. And I know that fans and them that don't want to hear it. But we do not have the things needed. And if we don't do that and jump into that pool and actually start giving these players and coaches that, then Fran Brown's going to figure that out pretty soon as well.
Yeah,
because
I just in my heart of hearts can't see that. I can't. I mean, you got to be a fool to come here if you think that's going to be the circumstance that you're going to land into. First of all, second of all, you got to be a fool to think you can have anything good come out of anything if you're the school going into this and just knowing that you're not going to take the time to invest now all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I just find it very hard to believe that they won't, I guess.
No, I mean, and he's younger, so he's definitely more relatable to the players and stuff like that. But like we talked about, like it's not about that anymore, man. It's about, like you said, money talks, bullshit walks. You can sell the education. You can sell, you know, family, culture, locker room schemes, playing time. You can do all that stuff. At the end of the day, if a guy's got a single mom.
Centers. If
a guy's got a single mom at home. That's behind on her mortgage with three or four younger brothers and sisters. Right. And you have an opportunity to actually make some money and help those people in your family. That's going to be your number one priority over anything else. And it doesn't even have to be that dire of a situation, right? The cost of living, all that stuff is going through the freaking roof right now. So I'm sure if any kid thinks, like we heard Matt Rhule talk about it, what is Matt Rhule saying? It's somewhere between $1 million and $2 million for a quarterback in the transfer portal right now?
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at 1.5, if you want something quality. Like a Riley Leonard is someone that's
West Virginia gave Jesse Edwards like $850,000. Like a player is not going to give that up. And he was here for 4 years. He was comfortable
and he was comfortable with the players, the coaches, the fans. He knew we loved him.
He said peace.
He said, "See, I wouldn't want to be you."
And if you think he left to go be under Coach Huggins, then obviously that was a lie too, because Huggins got fired and he still stayed there and he could have left.
Right.
So it was all about the Benjamins on that one. So at the end of the day, you could be a great recruiter. In the day of NIL, he's basically only been at Georgia. So for all intents and purposes, in the day of NIL where you have Georgia funded backing, it's not hard to sell that school. So it comes down to yourself. So in that situation, when you got the NIL money, you can give them the NIL money. Then that's the difference. Oh, well, yeah, Alabama, USC, Tennessee, Georgia, they all can give me this amount of money. Okay, well, then what are the next extra perks, right? And then that's when that comes into play. But when you don't got the money, do you even get a seat at the table? And that's what we're going to find out very shortly with Fran Brown.
Yeah, and I'm hopeful.
No, me too. And again, you get the young players. I mean, maybe you get some guys from Georgia. Maybe you get some guys from the teams where some of the coaches come from, and they come and they transfer. Like I said, that young initial energy, it's going to be there. So it wouldn't be a doubt in my mind. But like I said, you know, if he is successful, then what does it look like? And again, next year, we already talked about it, not really going to be the benchmark of every single season.
Yeah. So anyway, look, another unexpected conversation sparked by Dominic. Didn't plan to go down this road today, but I think we've made ourselves clear, and whether or not we've articulated it well or not. I mean, sometimes, you know, you sit here and talk live like this and you don't always make your points the way.
No.
How many times have you left the show and been like, shit, I wish I would have said this way, or I wish I'd have thought of this.
Or sometimes there's things you wanted to say and then you forgot to say them. So yeah, it's definitely difficult, you know, and we're not trying to come away. Like, I'm not trying to be negative. I'm not ever going to be there was legit fans that like were mad that we beat Pittsburgh. Cause they're like, oh, does this mean Dino's going to stay now? Like, people wanted us to lose and not make a bowl game so Dino would get fired. I'm never going to be that fan. Picks. I'm never going to be that fan. I want Fran Brown to come in. I want him to get 4 stars. I want him to get, you know, a good recruiting class and bring energy. And I'm going to be, I'm probably going to like the guy.
Our problem's, you know, not with a Fran Brown or any other coach that was to come in, guys.
It's not the coach. It's not whether or not we want the team to win. It is the fact that we are just using.
The school sucks.
And we're going by history. Sorry. I mean, we're going by facts and the history of what has transpired since NIL has come out. And so far, what our university and our community has shown me is that we're not willing to step up to the big boy table. We're still sitting at the little kids table during the holidays.
Yeah.
Dropping
gravy and mashed potatoes on our own laps, making a mess.
Yeah. Like, it's and we're just saying, like, I want them to win. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, we're not going to win consistently like our fans want us to, no matter who comes in, unless we start doling out the paper like everybody else. That's just really what it comes down to.
Okay. Look.
And I hope we do.
Bonus material. Because I only planned on talking about basketball today, but there is a press conference tomorrow on Twitch. Dom, let me know to let you all know. 10 o'clock on Twitch tomorrow morning. It's going to be the Fran Brown press conference, I guess. And I guess we'll find out here shortly where we'll be playing our bowl game So that'll be exciting too. So
are they having a show right now? There's a show.
It started at noon today, and you know how they do these things. They just drag it out as long as they can instead of just, you know, letting everybody know what the hell's going on. So, you know what I'm saying?
I was going to say, like, I see some getting filled up.
Yeah. But it's just like it's the same as the, Selection Sunday stuff, you know?
I don't know. Selection Sunday, they get through that pretty.
They you know what? You're somewhat, I'll give you that. They kind of do, but this seems to be like, it's
the way they talk
on.
About it.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like this today is dragging on. So anyways, we'll stay close to Twitter. And as soon as it's announced, it'll be there. So anyway, we appreciate all of you for tuning in and hanging out with us. And if you're in the spaces, we appreciate all of you. Love you guys. Enough can't be said for taking the time out of your day to sit on Twitter and listen to us talk whatever we're talking. So we appreciate it. For Joe, I'm Sean. We're out.
Peace.
Gentlemen, we appreciate you. David, Salty Warrior.
Oh, but Florida
Boy,
State.
That's all
Florida
that's
State,
left.
Florida State gets to play Georgia.
Oh, what a slap in the face. Oh my gosh, what a slap in the face. So they just came up with that one after the backlash. Like, you know what, guys, I got a great idea.
Well, because it's the big bowls after that, right?
Yeah, so. I know. It's just, that's funny, right? I mean, regardless of how you look at this whole situation, that's the committee getting one more last knife turn before they peace out.
Because now they're like, what can I do? Oh, let's have them play against Georgia and have Georgia kick their ass. So
and then
turn
then,
around
then
and
then
be
we,
like, "What? See, this is why."
Exactly.
Again, it's just a travesty.
It's a joke.
Freaking,
it's a Travis.
What's his name is a joke, too.
It's a Travis Sham mockery.
Look around. You can find cars like these on Auto Trader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on Auto Trader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on Auto Trader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.